You're very welcome back to the programme. Now, David Moore is the editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine, and he joins us regularly here on a Monday on the community radio Kilkenny City, proudly the only station in Ireland with a dedicated astronomy slot. David, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
Now, there's been plenty of happening in space exploration, some fascinating sky events visible from Ireland this week, and of course, we're approaching the summer solstice. Let's start with the big space news this week. One of the major stories this week was the announcement of the next Artemis mission crew. Tell us about the significance of this mission and who will be making the journey.
Well, you know, when Artemis 2 went up in April, We knew it was the start of a new era. The new administrative boss of NASA, Jared Isaacman, a billionaire, successful businessman, and himself an astronaut, paid for it himself, has really floored the accelerator with NASA. And instead of hanging around with red tape all the time, as he calls it, he is pushing the organization fast and furious in the future. So Artemis 1 happened before his watch. Artemis 2 happens. Artemis 3 is the one they've just announced the crew for to book next year. Then Artemis 4 is not only the year after, but they hope to have Artemis 5 in the same year and then get up to monthly launches to the moon. So if you thought Apollo was good in the late 60s or 70s, you ain't seen nothing yet with what's coming down the road. So a lot of people wondering, you know, how come nothing happened on the moon since 1972? And we this Artemis shot just a flash in the pan. Nothing could be further from the truth. You're seeing the real human presence, exploration of space, starting in your lifetime this year, and certainly this decade.
Now, some people noticed that the newly announced Artemis crew is entirely male. Given the attention that has been paid to diversity in space exploration in recent years, has that sparked much discussion with the astronomy and space community?
It sort of surprised me, because the big thing about NASA going back to the moon was that when they did it in the 60s and 70s with Apollo, there were 12 white males that landed on the moon's surface. And that was, you know, of its time, shall we say. And NASA's always said the first people going to land on the moon this time are going to be a woman and a person of color. And they've left out the woman in Artemis 3. I would have thought that's a bit of a PR gap. Plenty of female astronauts are competent to go up. And, you know, Artemis 4, which would land on the moon in 2028, only two people go down to the moon's surface. So it'll be very interesting to see, are they white males again, or are they going to be the female and person of color? Or they'll be a good same person, that could be just one person. So hopefully NASA has taken note and is sticking to their original plans. Yeah. Because, you know, it'll inspire young girls all around the world that they could be working on the moon and in space, and not to mention other minorities in the U.S. as well. So it's the ball's in NASA's court.
But is it possible?
They're all men again.
David, is it possible that NASA did think of this, but with such an important mission, they have decided that whether they're male or female, they've decided that this is the best crew to send on this mission, and it's not about women and men or men of color. It's not about that. It's about the people on the mission. Do you not think they've thought of this already, like?
Well, there's two things. First of all, I've applied to be an astronaut. And, you know, the qualifications are not that strict. You basically need a degree in science, good education, or a pilot's license. You know, you're going to be trained for years on your actual mission. And so you don't need to be the right stuff, as they used to say back in the early 60s, when nobody had been to space. When we hadn't had a moonshot and all that kind of thing. So there are plenty of people of any race, any gender, that are well able to go into space. And NASA has lots of a big astronaut pool to call on. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think it probably does come down to PR at the end of the day, rather than you have to have the top four astronauts, because I'm sure all of the astronaut pool are thinking, I could do that job, and they probably could.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, a Astronomy Ireland recently hosted a talk about robots exploring space independently rather than being directly controlled by humans. What were the key takeaways, and how does AI fit into the future of space exploration, David?
Yeah, we told everybody about this last week, and Julie held the monthly online talk for everybody in the country. And it was about the robotic exploration of space, as you say, not just the rovers that we have on other planets right now, which can sort of avoid bumping into things on their own. And basically, a human tells them where to travel over the coming day, and you program in that path, and off it goes. But we want robots to be able to get on with it on their own, to plan their own mapping features, so they almost don't need humans back on the Earth. Or perhaps the human commander will just simply say, go up that hill, and it'll be able to figure it out. Not only that, but if it sees any interesting rocks or other features along the way, it'll be able to decide to stop off and sample those itself. And so this was the gist of our talk by Dexter last week, who is zooming in from the UK. But he's also an AI expert, and he gave a very detailed explanation of how all these AI systems work. So if you're wondering about why they're all going to take our jobs and everything else, or what the future of AI is, I highly recommend the talk just for his explanation of AI. I mean, I've done a bit of computers in my training and the like, and I was a bit in the wilderness about AI, impressed by some of the things it can do, shocked by how many mistakes it makes. And he explained a lot of it to me in particular. And I think anyone interested in artificial intelligence will enjoy the talk, whether they have any interest in space or not. But then again, who doesn't have an interest in space? So if you actually go to our events page on our website and you order a ticket for that lecture, what we do after is we just send people a link to the recording. So you can still watch it online now. Just go along to astronomy.ie and hit the event section.
And if you haven't booked that lecture, can you still pay for to buy the recorded version of it?
The recording.
Yes.
You can, yes. In fact, you can actually go direct to the DVD section. We need to rename that going back decades. We always produce DVDs, but now they're actually recorded online.
Yes.
Since the pandemic, and we discovered Zoom. And so we can send people the link instead, so they're instantly available. They can download them onto their hard disk if they want to. And, does everybody have a DVD player still these days?
Yeah.
Perhaps you don't.
Well, we're going to be checking back.
Ladies on your phone.
We're going to be checking back with you next week now, David, to see, have you changed DVD on your website?
You know, we'll probably leave it there for historical purposes, but at some stage we need to overhaul that system now. Because we can still make a DVD for people if they're stuck back in the 20th century.
Now, David, many skywatchers managed to catch that beautiful conjunction of Venus and Jupiter over the past week. And for those who missed it, is it still worth looking up this week? And what can people expect to see if it is?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you still see Venus, and tonight, if it's clear for you, between 10 and midnight is the rough time to watch, so say 11 o'clock. By 11 o'clock, you'll certainly see Venus over in the west. And just below it, to the right a bit, is Jupiter. Jupiter outshines all the stars in the sky, and Venus is even brighter than Jupiter. And if you have a pair of binoculars, you'll fit the two into the field of view tonight, just about. But if you hold your fist out at arm's length, you'll easily cover Venus and Jupiter. That's how close they were. Last Tuesday, one finger would have covered the two at the same time. I missed it that night, but I got it the night before and some glimpses in the following nights, and got pictures to prove it. So did other people, even on their smartphones, because they sent them into the magazine to be published. So we'll have a record of that in a future issue of the magazine.
Oh, very
and,
good.
You know, they won't be this close and impressive till 2047. So do look at Venus and Jupiter. They might not be as close as they were last week, but you can still easily see those two planets in the evening sky.
Now, Wednesday night promises another spectacular sight, with Venus appearing extremely close to a thin crescent moon. When should people look, and where should they look? And is this one of those events that anyone can photograph with a smartphone?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Venus is the brightest thing in the sky until it sets just after midnight. So as soon as it gets dark, you'll see Venus first before everything else. And the moon is creeping into the evening sky this week. There's going to be a first moon on Sunday, I think it is. And so we're going to have a crescent moon in the sky all this week. until the weekend. And so it's going to pass by Venus, but it almost passes in front of Venus, as seen from Ireland. So there'll be about 1 moon diameter gap between Venus and the moon. So you've got the two brightest objects in the night sky, the moon and Venus, right next to each other. Should be incredibly spectacular to the naked eye. We're just hoping Wednesday night's going to be clear for the whole country. And you can snap it with your smartphone. If you snap in twilight, you don't need any of the night mode settings. Just take an ordinary picture like you do at a birthday party or wedding or anything like that. Your phone will figure it out easily. And you'll have a permanent record, which Astronomy Ireland magazine wants to publish. So again, go to astronomy.ie, look at the contact section. You'll see where to send pictures to the magazine in there. And, you know, your picture could be published in the coming issue of the magazine. And we won't get to the moon that close to Venus for a long time, because Venus is slowly sinking now, week by week, getting lower and lower. Will vanish in a few weeks' time and then be back in the morning sky. Nobody likes getting up at dawn to see Venus. So make the best of the next month is what I'm saying, especially Wednesday night with the moon right next to it.
And, of course, the moon is definitely taking center stage this week, because it also has a close encounter with the bright star Regulus on Friday night. Can you tell us a little bit about Regulus and explain that fascinating comparison between distance and the distance to the moon?
Yeah, Regulus is one of the brightest stars in the sky. It's the brightest star in the constellation of Leo. And it's the moon will pass near some of the brightest stars in the sky every month. And it's a great way of identifying the star and the constellation, because everyone knows what the moon looks like. So if you're looking out on Friday night, you'll be able to see Regulus right next to the moon. In fact, if you were just looking at the moon on Friday night, you would have wondered, what's that star right next to it? Because it won't be there the night before or the night after. And it is the brightest star in Leo. It's about 80 light years from us. So as you're watching, the light hitting the moon takes about 1 and a bit seconds to get into your eye. It takes 8 years for the light leaving Regulus to get into your eye. That's about a 2 billion times factor increase in distance. So, you know, the numbers in astronomy boggle people. But, you know, 2 billion times further away than the moon. You can say the words, but I don't think you can actually imagine how big a distance that is. Yet it looks quite serene. There's the moon and a lovely, quaint little star sitting next to it.
And that really puts the scale of the universe into perspective, David. Is that one of the biggest challenges in astronomy, helping people grasp just how enormous space really is?
Yeah, and it's what got me started. I remember when I was a kid at school, there was a book in the school library somebody recommended to me, and it showed the Earth next to the Sun. I didn't realize the Sun was 100 times wider than the Earth, and I thought, wow, the Earth's big, I'll never explore all of that. I wouldn't stand any chance of the Sun. And on the next page, the Sun was a tiny dot, and there was another star next to it, which was 100 times bigger than the Sun. And I thought, wow, that is super large. And on the next page, that giant star was tiny, and right next to it was another giant, super giant star. At this stage, my mind was blown, realizing that the Earth was an insignificant speck of sand in the cosmos. And why weren't they teaching us this at school as the most important subject? You know, because it really puts you in place as to how petty all of the dealings that humankind get on with when the universe is this vast. And I think you can really blow people's minds. It'll inspire young people to study everything in the universe, not just astronomy.
Now, the summer solstice arrives this Sunday morning. We often hear that it's the longest day of the year, but astronomically speaking, what exactly is happening between the Earth and the Sun at the moment?
Yeah, well, as the Earth goes around the Sun, the Earth's axis is tilted over by about 23 degrees compared to its orbit around the Sun. So the north-south pole doesn't stand upright as the Earth goes around, so it's tilted by 23 degrees. And at some stage, the tilt will be directly in the direction of the Sun. So the Sun will be at its most northerly point on the Earth's overhead, thereby heating the northern hemisphere at its most. That's when summer begins. That's always been the definition of summer. Some people are trying to change it, but we're not going to let them do that. So right now it's late spring today, and it'll be summer on Sunday at 9:24 a.m. I mean, it also marks the longest day of the year in terms of daylight hours. So after this, the great thing for astronomers is the nights start to get longer, which is what we love.
Yeah, absolutely.
horrible sunshine that's around this time of year.
Okay, look, we're going to leave it there. And don't forget, anyone who enjoys regular sky watching updates but hasn't joined Astronomy Ireland at the moment, they need to go to astronomy.ie to join. If you're interested to do that. David Moore, editor of Astronomy Magazine, thank you as always for joining us. Don't forget, if you'd like to receive Astronomy Ireland magazine every month along with the Society's weekly astronomy updates, you can find all the details at Astronomy Ireland, astronomy.ie. David, thanks for joining us on Community Radio Kilkenny City and Ireland's home of radio astronomy. Thank you, David.
My pleasure.
Okay, that brings us to the end of this evening's programme.